activism begins with ACT. The Rush Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 32 after the hour, and joining us for today's activist agenda, we've got a great activist from the Pennsylvania area. We've got Patrick Nightingale on the line. How you doing, Patrick?
Russ, I'm doing fantastic, and thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to some of us in the what I like to call the hinterlands of cannabis reform out east.
Yes. Now, are you in Pittsburgh or still in Harrisburg with the politicking going on?
I am in Pittsburgh right now, and our medical marijuana legislation is currently being considered by the Pennsylvania Senate, and the Senate needs to make a decision whether or not to accept the version that was sent over by the House in its entirety, or whether or not it is going to send back amended language and further continue to debate and negotiate what our medical marijuana legislation will finally look like.
Let's start by telling our listeners what the basics are of the Pennsylvania medical marijuana legislation, and then we'll start putting toppings on it like a pizza. We'll figure out what all these amendments are, but what are some of the basics first?
The basics are that we would create a medicinal cannabis program with 15 qualifying conditions, with a limitation on available cannabis products for those patients who have qualifying conditions, a restricted number of licensed grows and dispensaries, somewhat along the lines of the Illinois model, but not quite as open as the Colorado model, and with creating a medical marijuana advisory board that would include members of the medical community and members of law enforcement who would then be tasked with promulgating regulations for the license application process, as well as for regulations for how the industry itself will operate. It is a regulation-heavy bill, and that is what we had to do to get it through the cesspool known as Harrisburg.
Sure, sure. Now, let's start with the conditions, because I know one thing that caught my eye, and I don't know if this was in the original bill or if this was something the House added, but the condition of autism, which is the first time I think I've seen a medical state put that down, you know, explicitly. Of course, California can get it for anything, but explicitly. Did that come from the House, or was that in the original bill?
That came from one of the over 200 House amendments that were introduced. The majority of the House amendments that were introduced were designed to derail this legislation, to knock it off its track. But Representative Russ Diamond from the eastern part of our state, and my apologies to Representative Diamond, I don't specifically recall his district, but Representative Diamond introduced two critical amendments, one of which was introducing autism as a qualifying condition. And that was not part of Senate Bill 3. That was not part of our original legislation. And the other amendment that Representative Diamond introduced, which was utterly critical, was an amendment that stripped a 10% THC cap from the House amendment that was being considered. And it only passed by 97-91. So we literally came within 4 or 5 votes of having a medicinal cannabis law that had a 10% THC cap on it.
Yeah, it's so odd when you hear something like that, especially in my perspective coming from the West Coast, because a lot of times we keep pointing out how the medical marijuana patients need so much more potent a medicine. So to want to arbitrarily cap it at 10%, that would be something you'd do for the recreational side, not the medical side, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, if we were going to talk about it at all. But you right. have to understand that here in Pennsylvania, we were fighting back CBD-only legislation. We were fighting back strain restrictions. Mm. Our bill, as it's passed right now, does not permit smoking cannabis and does not permit the dispensation of flower material.
Right.
So, you know, we have had a struggle to get momentum and traction through a very conservative Pennsylvania legislature. And that's what's frustrating, because you know, Pennsylvanians see what's going on in the rest of the country. We have critically ill Pennsylvanians routinely traveling out of state to acquire medicinal cannabis products at, you know, obviously great legal peril to themselves. And the best our legislature can do is to, you know, try to foist something upon us with arbitrary restrictions because some conservative, socially conservative legislature from, you know, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the heart of Amish country, is worried about diversion.
So this is sounding a lot like what we saw in Minnesota and New York. No home grow, no flower, no smoking. It'd all be like pills, tinctures, salves, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that exactly. That's what's in our bill. The language of the bill also includes hash oil concentrates and vaporization. So to the extent that I can sit here as a cannabis activist and give hope to medicinal cannabis patients in Pennsylvania, we at least have that in there. But it is not perfect by any means. And the other thing that concerns me about this legislation is the Medical Marijuana Advisory Board that I just described would include three representatives of law enforcement,
yeah,
chiefs of police, state police, and the District Attorneys Association. And the amendment would charge the Medical Marijuana Advisory Board with setting a per dosage cap for medical marijuana products. So in other words, we've got three cops on a medical advisory board telling us how much medical cannabis products should cost.
Well, I know at the police academy there, they must spend a lot of time on all these medical issues for these cops to have that sort of authority, right?
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. I recently found myself facing a felony manufacturing charge for a client who had an e-nail. I had to pull out Google and online videos to show, no, this is for consumption. This is not for manufacturing. We have an uphill battle. We have a very uphill battle in Pennsylvania, especially if law enforcement is going to be involved with our medicinal bill.
The prosecutor thought that a dab nail was for making concentrates?
Yes. there was a butane torch used for cooking the wax when the electronic device failed.
I see.
I am quoting from the affidavit of probable cause. I shit you not.
Wow. What an amazing uphill battle you've got to fight. We're speaking with Patrick Nightingale in Pennsylvania regarding this bill. It's gone through the House. It's back at the Senate for reconciliation. Do you see any more restrictions coming from the Senate side, or are they going to try to repeal some of these restrictions? What's happening on the Senate side, really?
Well, you know, practically speaking, here in Pennsylvania, we have a budget crisis right now. Our governor has not signed the budget. Pennsylvania Republicans are at war with our Democratic governor. And, you know, the feedback that I am getting is that this is pure politics. The Republicans are not going to hand our governor a legislative victory with medicinal marijuana until the budget crisis is resolved. So I don't think the Senate is going to change the language at all, but I don't think that they're going to send it back to the House with concurrence until we have a resolution of our budget issue.
So we have a situation where seriously sick and disabled ill people in Pennsylvania are political pawns in this game over the budget.
And they have been for months. The House would not take up this legislation last year in 2015 because of the budget crisis. So it continues.
But this governor is approving of this bill, right? We expect when it does get to his desk, we'll have the 24th medical marijuana state.
Absolutely. Governor Wolf will sign this legislation unless the patients and the advocates came to him and said, Governor, don't sign it. He has been a steadfast and stalwart supporter of medicinal cannabis reform from the minute that he took office in January of 2015. Our former governor, Republican Governor Tom Corbett, refused to even meet with any of the families with sick children, some of these families with Dravet syndrome, these severely epileptic children. Governor Wolf has made a point of coming down and meeting with us each and every time that we are in Harrisburg. It has been such a radical change, but unfortunately, Governor Wolf is a Democratic governor in a state controlled by Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate. So his ability to, you know, to get things done is obviously somewhat limited.
But I'm glad you bring up the difference that a governor can make in this situation, because today a lot of people are voting in primaries across the country, Arizona, Utah, and Idaho, my home state. And sometimes people in our community discount the value of their vote, like how much power there is in that. But it sounds to me like if Corbett was still there, this would be all a moot point, wouldn't it?
It really would be, because we understood with Governor Corbett that we had to have veto-proof majorities in both the House and the Senate in order to get this passed. And there is zero chance we could have had a veto-proof majority in the Pennsylvania House. We had it in the Senate, but we could not have pulled that off in the House. So it was absolutely critical to have a change at the top. And that's the type of thing that, yes, it resonates all throughout the political process. You know, time and time again, people ask me, what can I do to help? And the response is, are you registered to vote? Do you know who your local representative is? Do you know who your local state senator is? Do you know who your federal representatives are? Because we cannot change anything in Pennsylvania unless it is done legislatively. And that is the reality.
Yes. Well, Patrick, thank you for informing us on this state medical marijuana bill. While I've got you on the line, I was wondering if I could ask you about what's going on in municipal-wise in Pittsburgh, which I understand is making some changes to a decrim situation there?
Yes. We have introduced a decriminalization ordinance that would call upon the City of Pittsburgh Police to issue a local ordinance summary violation instead of charging someone with a misdemeanor level criminal offense. Philadelphia, Chris Goldstein and Mike Weider and Nikki Allen Poe and some of those guys, they did this in 2014. And to be completely honest with you, I did not think it would work. I did not think that it was permissible under our supremacy clause. But in the ensuing time, they have seen an 80% reduction in arrests in the city of Philadelphia. That is 3,000 fewer people in Philadelphia being charged with misdemeanor level cannabis offenses. So we decided to bring that right here to Pittsburgh. And you know, the language of our ordinance needed to be tweaked just a little bit. And that actually happened today in city council. But I am optimistic that by April, the city of Pittsburgh police will have policies and procedures so that an individual within the city of Pittsburgh who is in possession of 30 grams or less of cannabis, 8 grams or less of hashish, will be cited with a local ordinance with a maximum $100 fine and will not be charged with a misdemeanor, which would necessarily involve fingerprinting, going to court, hiring a lawyer, and potentially having a criminal conviction on your record for the rest of your days.
Yeah, as I was reading the reports on this, Patrick, it seemed like it was somewhere in a realm between a pure decrim and a like a summons thing, in that there was still some sort of record that a person would have. It just wouldn't be the criminal misdemeanor record. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are correct on that. We tried to imitate Philadelphia, which created a civil fine, a purely civil fine. And in the process, we discovered that only Philadelphia has the ability to do that in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Every other jurisdiction, every other city, every other municipality, I don't care if you're in Wilkes-Barre or in Erie or in Pittsburgh or in Washington, wherever, any code violation, whether it's not cutting your grass, whether it's a noise violation, or it's not shoveling your sidewalk, any code violation is treated as a summary criminal offense. And quite frankly, we were all a little bit surprised by this. We didn't understand how a local code ordinance would be treated as a summary offense by the courts, but that is the only mechanism we have in place in order to file this type of ordinance procedurally. What we did do is we changed the language of the ordinance so that when it is filed, if someone were to search the Administrative Office of Pennsylvania Courts docket, they would see violation of a Pittsburgh ordinance prohibiting certain types of conduct. It would say nothing about marijuana. So okay, we believe that we have largely accomplished our goal of protecting people from, you know, that type of public scrutiny as a result of this, and most certainly not having fingerprinting and entering someone into the national searchable database is a big step in that direction. But, you know, Philadelphia did something that apparently only Philadelphia could do.
And any idea how they got to be the unique city in Pennsylvania that has this right?
Philadelphia is the only city in Pennsylvania that is defined as a city of the first class.
Oh.
Pittsburgh is the only city that is a city of the second class. Everyone else is either third, fourth, or fifth, or whatever.
Huh.
Philadelphia has had certain legislatively created Philadelphia-specific procedures through their municipal court. But it literally took legislation through Harrisburg, voted by the Pennsylvania legislature and signed by the governor in order to carve out this unique procedural situation for Philadelphia. So rather than suggest, hey, we need to amend Pennsylvania law for Pittsburgh's decriminalization ordinance, we thought, at least in the short term, okay, we can't call it civil. It has to be treated as a summary criminal violation. It's not perfect. We don't have absolute anonymity for people, but we, you know, I would say we're 80% of the way to the way of accomplishing what Philadelphia has done.
Well, that's really fascinating. And how fascinating that your state law calls you a second-class city. How insulting.
Well, better than the third-class city Washington and Butler.
I guess so. Well, maybe in the future we can get that fixed in Pennsylvania law. Pittsburgh can get real decrim, 100%, but 80%, we'll take that. That's a good thing. No fingerprints, no arrests. Hey, that's a good day for me. Thank you, Patrick, for joining us here.
And ultimately... And just so you know, our goal in Pennsylvania is full recreational, full industrial, full commercial, but it's going to be baby steps getting there, and we know that.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Thanks for talking to us today.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.